Thank you very much for coming to my presentation. It's almost lunchtime. I know it's 12 o'clock, but I'll try to finish up very quickly. So I want to start thanking my co-author, Bing C. He's my PhD supervisor. And this is a part of my PhD work I'm doing at University of Saskatchewan. So if we start, from morning we're talking about the spatial variability, how soil varies from location to location, and how those information we can use in different environmental prediction or modeling soil landscape processes, adopting precision agriculture, quality assessment, soil quality assessment, or managing the natural resources. Over four decades of systematic study of soil spatial variability has identified different issues. Like, if we measure the soil property very close in distance, they are more similar than the property measured in a far apart. So this is known as the spatial similarity. Similarly, the measured soil property can vary in a cyclical order, forming a periodicity or cyclic form, which is known as the periodicity. Or they can have a increasing or decreasing trend for due to different factors. And due to this trend, if we just chop up the transect or the distance over a short period or short distance and measure the mean and variance, then they will not be same because of the spatial trend. And creating the spatial says non-stationarity. Another issue has also been identified as a non-linearity. If we take a quick example, the soil science example, like soil water is controlled by vegetation. And another way, so soil water is also controlled by topography. From different sessions, different authors also mentioned that. Now, if you want to measure or if you want to check the effect of vegetation and topography together, can we just observe separately and add them up together to get that vegetation? But it is not, because their effect is a non-linear. Kind of, we cannot express them in a linear transfer function, and they are non-additive. So because they do not follow the principle of superposition. So this is also called the non-linearity. And over four decades of study of these different kind of issues, when came up, different analysis technique has been used. Like spatial similarity has been dealt with geostatistics. It's a well-known method in soil science. Periodicity has been dealt with spectral analysis. Non-stationary has been dealt with wavelet analysis. It's almost two decades it's been in soil science, but it's a very promising method. And now we're trying to find out any method that can deal with non-stationary and non-linearity together. So I adopted Hilbert Huang transform, which is came up is around a decade. And it is very promising in this method because it deals with non-stationary and non-linearity together. Like, it is intuitive, direct, posteriori, and adaptive. It is completely based on what is present in the data. They do not follow any of the mathematical assumption or any mathematical thing that it doesn't assume anything. So, and it explains the hidden physical mechanism directly from the data. It's completely data-driven. There's no mathematical basis for that. And it has a two-part. Like, first part is called empirical mode decomposition, and the second part is Hilbert spectral analysis. Now, if we try to look at the each part, like empirical mode decomposition, it just separates the variation, a different scale of variation, representing different processes into different mode function. According to the characteristic scale, whatever scale is present in the data, it just separates out into the scales. And it is completely adaptive, data-driven, and it's empirical, not theoretical. So if I take a look how this analysis technique works here, in empirical mode decomposition, if we have a spatial series with different frequency component right here, and if we just first step, we identify all the maxima or the top position. And then we join by as a spline interpolation or a spline line. In second, we identify all the minima locations and identify by spline line. Then we calculate the local mean. So once we get the local mean, then we subtract the local mean from the original spatial series. Then we get the first IMF or the first intensive mode decomposition. So in first IMF, which separates very finer scale variation. And this way, if we go on subtracting that with a larger scale of variation, finally, we will come up with the overall residue in the data set. So very fine scale to the larger scale of variation. Gradually, we come up following this empirical mode decomposition. So once we get the IMF, now we do very well-established Hilbert transform, which gives us the instantaneous frequency and instantaneous amplitude. From the instantaneous amplitude, if we calculate the energy, and make a contour graph of the energy as a function of space and location, that's giving me the scale and location specific soil spatial variability. So I can identify which scale and which location it has the maximum variation. But from a presentation, I'm only talking about the methodology, but why I adapted the methodology, I have been working in a field, like this is the digital elevation map of my field for last 4 years. I was measuring soil water along a transect of 128 points. This is a very common landscape and covering more than 80% of the Canadian prairie region. And it's called hummocky landscape. Soil is kind of mollisolic soil in a grassland situation. So when I was looking at the data and all my measurement over 4 years, it was very frequently it was showing non-linear and non-stationary characteristics. So I use neutron probe and the time domain reflectometry to measure up to 140 centimeter depth at each 20 centimeter over 4 years, 2007 to 2010. Now, if you take a look, how those things, how my spatial location, or how my measurement look like, here in this graph, x-axis indicates the distance along the transect, and y-axis indicates soil water storage in meter, and the top black line is my relative elevation setting, or the topographic setting. Now, if you take a look, top higher elevation, low soil water content, low elevation, high water content, and throughout the transect. So we clearly got a pattern with elevation. And this is a one data measurement in 2007 when I first started measuring. Then over time, this is all my measurement around, some of my measurement, not all, but around 20 measurement is showed here. And it's all showed the clear pattern with relative elevation. But when we did the correlation analysis, linear correlation with soil water storage and elevation, this is a 7 measurement from 2008, but I did not find any of those very highly significant correlation. Which as Dr. Green was mentioning, that he also did not find any correlation with the relative elevation and soil water storage. Now what I did, I used that empirical mode decomposition to decompose all my variation into different scales or different IMFs. So x-axis indicates the distance along the transect, y-axis indicates the water storage, and the top graph, that is one of my measurements. So in EMD gave me the first IMF, which identified which separated very finer scale variation or the small scale variation or high frequency variation around 10 to 15 meter. So which might be attributed from the localized variation in soil water storage. And this IMF2, which separated the variation around 40 to 45 meter scale, which might be attributed from the landform elements and the microtopographical variation, which I'll show a little bit later how those things are present in my landscape. And IMF3, whatever the elevation pattern I showed, probably this is looks like just like the elevation right here. So it's almost separated at 90 to 100 meter scale. And when I looked at my elevation data, they are around 90 to 100 meter scale. And IMF4, 5, 6, they just separated all those larger scale variations. Now, once I get this one at all the IMFs, because as all the IMFs are separated from the data, so their variance contribution from each IMF is also piled up together to represent the overall data. So I calculated the variance contribution from each IMF, and IMF1 is representing very low, like 7.2%. So it's indicating that it's not very important processes that is contributing to the soil water storage control, or soil water storage, and this is not at all correlated to any of the controlling factor. But IMF2 is contributing around 10% of the variation and moderately correlated with relative elevation and organic carbon. However, IMF3, it represented around 42%. It's combined more than other variations, and it is highly correlated with relative elevation. Similarly, IMF4 is represented 12% of the variation and almost low to moderate correlation with almost all the factors, representing a combined control from all those factors. At the same time, if we take a look, relative elevation here, all these three IMF is represented a negative correlation, but if we see the larger scale variation, they have a positive correlation. So maybe this is attributing towards the overall very low correlation. This some scale positive, some scale negative, is just neutralizing each other to get a very low overall correlation. Now, once we get this IMF and think about what are the processes going on, and now if we try to take a look to the different distance and scale, or scale location specific information on the Hilbert spectra, x-axis indicates distance, y-axis indicates the scale along the transect, and my top graph, whatever I was saying, how much landform variations going on within the landscape, this is my relative elevation, And CW indicates the concave element, CW cultivated wetland, CX is a convex element, UW is uncultivated wetland. So this is a different kind of situation I got in my transect. Now if you take a look, here, this more than 90 meter scale is representing, the color scale indicates the strength of the variation. So here the scale of 90 meter is representing the topographic variation, which is this around 90 to 100 meter scale. And if we take a look to around 20 to 45 meter, what are the different landform elements is contributing. And if we take a look, these two position is a hotspot, and we can see here how those different landform elements are varying. So this Hilbert spectra is identifying the hotspot of those variation due to landform elements, which is controlling the soil water storage. From my study, what I can say that whatever we found in the overall correlation, that may not represent the real control. And different type of correlation at different scale may neutralize each other to get the overall measurement correlation, low correlation. So whatever I saw for the relative elevation at a very fast look, we may just get lost from there. And finally, the scale-specific correlation provides better information on soil water storage control because we can see at each scale what are the different controlling factors contributing or controlling the soil water storage. And we have seen the elevation is redistribute the water or the in Humakki landscape is the most controlling factor, is contributing maximum variation at the IMF3 or 90 to 100 meter scale. And finally, we can say that Hilbert-Fong transform provides a better and physically meaningful scale information. It includes the non-stationarity and non-linearity into action because it is adaptive and it's completely based on the data. It doesn't take into any mathematical consideration. So where we're going, where we can use this information, we can just for modeling any of the surface, subsurface hydrological processes or soil landscape process modeling, or even we can do the scale prediction because throughout the day we're talking about how soil changes at different scale. So once we know that, we can upscale or downscale the information. So finally, I want to acknowledge my funding agency, NSARC, and University of Saskatchewan for their financial support and personal communication with Dr. Wu and Dr. Huang about their methodology and the understanding of that. And data collection, so many different people helped me in the field, but Dr. Yates and Mr. Chow, I have to mention their name. So finally, any questions?
Questions for us?
Yes.
In your decomposition of the
IMFs.
Yeah, the IMFs. How do you identify exactly what scale it represents? I missed that.
Yeah, like if you want to exactly identify, because when you do the Hilbert transform, it identifies the instantaneous frequency. And the instantaneous frequency is a localized frequency. That's the way it's dealing with the non-linearity.
So you don't know the scale as you get down the IMF, you use the information, the IMF, to determine your scale and you look at frequency.
Yeah, you can, that's the exact way and exact location to do the frequency. And but if you want to overall represent and get an average scale, whatever is the best way to do, you can check how many oscillations present within your total data set. Like I have 576 meter, maybe I have 20 oscillations present, so or 20 cycles present. Yes. There is a progress in the research, but I haven't gone through yet so far. But there is a progress in the Hilbert-Huang transform because this is a method developed from NASA, and Professor Huang developed in 1998, and so there is a progress in the research to get into the 2D space. But personally, I haven't been so far yet. Yes.
Thanks for a very nice presentation. The method looks neat, but you made a statement about non-linearity.
Yes.
How exactly is the method going to solve non-linearity, which is a physical phenomenon? It's two processes that are non-linear.
Yeah.
Has nothing to do with the data. The data just show what they are.
Yeah.
So where is non-linearity coming out here?
Yeah, that's the, like, one thing when you do the Hilbert transform in all other methods, because when you take a linear transform, because all this explained by linear transformation function, but when you do the Hilbert transform, it identifies the local prediction. That is called local predictability.
Question in the back?
Yes, Jenny.
Have you run the Kesko coherency analysis in the DSF? What have you gained from the inverse fit analysis relative to the classical regression?
Yes, I compared with the geostatistics, then spectral, then wavelet analysis, and all the way how I am gaining for this different kind of nonlinear function. Is because finally when I do the scale specific prediction, because if we use the other scale information to do a prediction overall how much I am gaining, but if we do this IMF information to get an overall scale specific prediction, that is giving me around 20% extra better prediction than the other methods, like if we just decompose into the spectral analysis or spatial coherency or even the wavelet analysis. So this way I'm getting around 20% of better prediction.
Okay, well, I'd like to thank Asim and all of our other speakers today.